Health Insights. I am your host, Craig, and today is going to be a solo episode. At the time of me recording this, this is pretty snowy and cold outside, so I figured what better time for me to kind of sit around and enjoy some hot tea and talk about something that's very near and dear to my heart, and that is social anxiety. So social anxiety is one of those conditions. A lot of times whenever therapists get into this profession, it's because there's been something that has happened in their life that has kind of called them to this type of profession. And that is definitely what this is for me. You see, whenever I was younger, I did suffer from social anxiety, and I still do to some extent today. So I want to talk a little bit about social anxiety and specifically on different ways of reducing social anxiety and then hopefully even overcoming it with time and practice. But before we get into that, let's first define what social anxiety is. So in previous episodes, we talked specifically about anxiety. So social anxiety is more specific in dealing with different social situations. This is a very difficult type of anxiety because a lot of people suffer from it, and it's something that's growing. There's a lot of different reasons why this might be happening, but one of the most predominant reasons is because our form of communications are taking more and more place when we're not face-to-face, whether or not it's over phone, whether or not it's not through text or email or whatever it may be. Our form of communication has expanded and it's transformed. And because of that, we're having less face-to-face time with people. This doesn't mean that we don't get that face-to-face time. It just means that we have less exposure to it. And when we have less exposure to things, it actually gives us an ability to be more avoidant, right? So let me give you an example. Let's say, and some of you actually may be able to identify with this. Let's say that you know that you're going to be giving a speech in class today or at work today, and you're nervous about it. You feel your heart starting to pump, and you feel yourself starting to get warm, and you start to think about different ways that it'll go, you know, whenever you are giving your speech, whenever you are talking to everyone and their eyes are on you and their attention's focused on you. Well, what might happen if I mess up or this doesn't go right? Well, people maybe not like me, or they make fun of me, or maybe even start judging me while I'm giving this presentation. These are all very, very common things for people that have social anxiety. In fact, this type of anxiety can strike such dread that it becomes more and more common to avoid any type of social situation. And in today's society, that becomes easier and easier. I can order food from my phone without talking to a human being. I can actually do most things online without any type of interaction. I can sign in places or do most of my communication with very, very minimal human contact if I'm really trying. And the challenge with this is, let's say that I'm already shy around people, or let's say that I'm already nervous about talking to people. This only amps it up, because I'm no longer giving myself the opportunity, or there is no opportunity or lower amount of opportunity to develop any type of social skills. So me working in the counseling field, and specifically a lot with adolescents, I have worked around social anxiety, and like I've told you, it's something that I've suffered from before, so it's something I'm very familiar with. Right, a lot of times we label it as different things, like shyness is one of the more common ones, or introverted. And while though there is some truth to those aspects, what social anxiety is crippling. And it becomes very difficult to actually participate in, you know, society and your community, with your family or your friends. And it transforms your relationships, and it is really an isolating experience. And it can be such a powerful, isolating experience that a lot of the stronger relationships that you may form won't actually be with people, whether or not that's forming with books or video games or, you know, whatever type of, or TV, anything like that. Or you might start to have friends that you make online, whether or not that's through chat rooms or gaming or emails or, you know, phones or whatever it may be, where you're still able to form a relationship and create, you know, relatively deep connections, but there just isn't a lot of social interaction. And it becomes hard because, like I said before, that becomes reinforced where you continue to avoid social interactions. And that means that especially whenever anxiety is involved, it becomes easier to anticipate, how are things going to go wrong? How is this not going to go right? I'm not going to be able to communicate the way that I want. I'm not going to be able to get my point across or my feelings across. And I'm just going to end up being humiliated. I'm going to not be able to do it. So someone that has social anxiety will avoid all the time. And this is pretty hard if you are, you know, parent of someone that has social anxiety. That means that they may not talk to you as much, or they may not engage with you. They may sit in their room most of the day on their phone or their computer watching TV or reading. And it becomes hard even if you are someone that's in a relationship with someone that has social anxiety, where it might make it hard for them to get out and see people and talk to people, even if they're friends and family, and sometimes even with you. It makes it hard because they get predisposed to feeling like social interactions are not going to be good. So if you recall back in our anxiety episode where we talk about our anxiety and our stress response, right? Where anytime that we get into an adverse situation or a situation that could be threatening, our stress response goes off, right? And anxiety starts to build. So it's really easy for human beings who are social creatures and we're built and wired for connection, that whenever it feels like social interactions are going to go bad, our anxiety, our stress response starts up. It's a threat to us and our survival, right? Since we are built for connection and built to be around other people, that means that our neurobiology is wired to be paired with and connected to, you know, the larger group as a whole or other people. And whenever it feels like those relationships get threatened, then our body will respond to it like a threat on our life, and our neurobiology will respond that way. And that's one of the things that causes this anxiety, is if it becomes hard for me to talk and connect with people, then it becomes harder and harder for me to survive. This is something that is really deeply wired into us, even if someone that has social anxiety isn't really aware of it, which is one of the reasons why it can be such a dangerous type of anxiety. Right, because it's an isolating type of anxiety, which are always the hardest type of mental health issues to have, or the ones that pull you away from people, and most of them do, but this one is specifically geared towards it, right? So it becomes a reinforced habit, if you will, or it becomes a reinforced behavior, whereas if I'm going to have an interaction with my friend and my anxiety is starting up, it's like, uh-oh, things aren't going to go well, or they're going to judge me, or things aren't going to go right. Well, guess what? Any type of interaction that you have with them, you know, if you misspeak, or if it seems like they just don't really quite understand, or maybe they aren't as interested as you're hoping, then your brain will be like, yep, see, I told you, that's right, and it will get reinforced. And it's like, I might as well not say anything, I might as well not have even brought this up. And you'll be thrown further into that isolation, thrown further and further away from people. So whenever we start to work with social anxiety, it is a process, just like dealing with most types of mental health issues. And with this one, it is a slow integration back into social interaction, right? So that's where you start to practice social skills, right? And you'll practice this usually with someone else. So this is really great whenever people that have social anxiety have friends or family, they're closer, they understand this, because they may be able to have what are called lower risk conversations, which means that you can just have a conversation. If things go wrong, or they, you know, if something doesn't land right, you guys can pause and you guys can talk about what happened, and you can help them through that right there, right? Rather than them going away, feeling like it didn't go right, and not having any opportunity to process or understand what happened, and then better yet, rewind the clock and give it a go again. This is often what will happen whenever someone that has social anxiety, this is what they do in therapy, is they practice having conversations, they practice talking about things. You know, if it's someone that has social anxiety, then they're used to avoiding social situations. So we know that in dealing with any type of anxiety, instead of avoiding, you actually have to confront some of the fears that you have. So if my fear is I don't want to talk to people, then I have to put myself in situations where I do talk to people. Whether or not that's me calling up different stores and asking the hours of operation, you know, a couple times a week, or going and ordering my food through the phone and then eventually going inside and doing it in person, or just talking to someone for 10 minutes, you know, a couple times a week, or whatever that may be, taking that slow progression. So doing any type of anxiety work includes this type of work, which is the slow inoculation, the slow exposure to the thing that causes the anxiety, to the thing that causes the stress, and to being able to have a different experience, right? So every time that someone has social anxiety is able to be exposed to a situation that is anxiety or stress provoking, and they have an experience where, okay, things didn't go bad, then the response, the stress response, can become a little bit weaker, right? The brain starts to wire itself a different way. And that's really what we're looking for. So in doing this, it becomes hard because that means you have to help the person that has social anxiety catch themselves whenever they start to catastrophize or whenever they start to imagine that everything can go wrong. And they have to be encouraged to continue to try the social interaction, continue through the adversity, right? Social interactions don't go right all the time. There's a lot of times where people miscommunicate or misunderstand each other, and that's, you know, unfortunately, that's just a normal part of human communication. As someone that has social anxiety almost feels like it has to be perfect, right? They have to get it right. So really normalizing that and helping them understand it and catching it in the moment, encouraging them to continue, can have huge benefits. Huge benefits. And of course, there are other ways of addressing social anxiety that may be a little more fun. And that's kind of the realm that I like to stay in, right? I like to address anxiety doing something fun because anxiety is already horrible enough. So that's whenever you start to get into the territory of, especially with social anxiety, going out and playing games with people, whether or not that's board games or card games or anything like that. That's where you might go, and it's almost like going into a group setting or a small group setting is where games can be such a big influence. And games have certain rules, you have something to do, and that's something that really helps those that have social anxiety learn about the different structure, the different ways that you can interact in a safer environment. And really, addressing any type of social anxiety is best done in a group setting, right? It's best done around other people. It's hard to do in isolation because there's a social component, and you have to be able to expose yourself to the anxiety to have a different experience. Doing it around several other people is a definite benefit. And it's even more of a benefit when you could do it around other people that also have social anxiety, right? Because then you guys have a shared interest, you guys have a shared pain point, and something that you guys are all working on, and it's something that you know about. So that's where you get to different clubs, right? Like I was talking about the games, the card places. There's a lot of comic book shops that do different games like this, and one of the main games is Dungeons and Dragons. Or at least one that I'm very familiar with, or Pathfinder, and these are called role-playing games where you assume the role, so you don't even have to act like yourself. You would actually act like a character. And while acting like that character, you can be a character that's shy or really outgoing or really poetic or really funny or really dramatic or anything like that, right? You can go to an extreme. And being able able to act like a different character, and everyone is doing it. So being able to do that in that social situation actually gives the person the opportunity to practice different social skills in a smaller group setting while they're doing something that may be fun for them. And that's actually a little bit one of the things I want to talk about here is I run a group doing this very thing where I do this role-playing game, Dungeons and Dragons. It's a therapy group where we play Dungeons and Dragons with others that have social anxiety with the goal of helping building those social skills and aiming at helping you in these different social situations so the social anxiety doesn't cripple you and making you more comfortable around other people, helping you to engage in conversation right through practicing that with this game in a fun setting with other people around your age, which is actually the best way of addressing social anxiety. So not only do you get the benefit of doing this in a fun setting with other people that are suffering from similar issues that you are, but you also get to do this with a trained therapist that can help you whenever you run into different issues or challenges, and they're directed at helping you with the social anxiety. But like I said, the social anxiety is done best in a group, and this definitely fulfills that. And the added bonus is that whenever you work on different issues like this in a group setting and things are fun, it becomes easier to practice skills, which means that you can move from a place of having terribly crippling social anxiety to being more socially astute and being able to enter into a social situation with some more confidence with these skills that you practiced, right? Any type of social interaction that you have becomes easier when you have more and more practice, and doing so in a group setting definitely has more and more benefits than trying to practice in isolation, right? So social anxiety, just kind of like the over 30,000 foot view, like I said, it is becoming more and more common. That's just the way that our society is, with how communication is and with how it becomes easy for us to avoid social interactions. And the easier and easier that it becomes to avoid social interactions, the more and more common it's going to be. So social anxiety is something that a lot of people suffer from. It's something that isn't going away. And the only way of being able to address it is to be able to allow yourself to go into social situations. And that's the same way that I had to address my social anxiety, was that I got into a place where finally I had to decide that isolating and being shy and staying away from people wasn't an option anymore. And any type of social interaction that I was going to get into, I had to stay, you know, I had to say yes to. I had to do it. I had to make myself do it. And in doing so and making that switch and making that conscious choice and that effort and going against what my guts were telling me and what, you know, my body wanted to do and what my mind was screaming at me, having these conversations and exposing myself to it was something that allowed me to be where I am now, where I meet with people for a living, right? I talk with people every day. I'm doing a podcast where I talk with people. I can go to a random person in a store and have a conversation with them. I can, you know, I'd rather call someone on the phone and order food or go up there in person and talk to somebody rather than sending emails or rather than texting or anything like that. It becomes easier for me to do that, and it's something that I actually enjoy doing now rather than avoiding it. And this may be something that you can do as well, and it has to be something that you're choosing and you're willing to and you're wanting to confront, because living in isolation and living alone, which is that's what social anxiety does, it's a really difficult life. It's really hard. And not only is it hard, it really robs other people of the experience that they may be able to have with you, robs other people of the relationship that they may be able to build with you. And I know that there may be a part of you that if you're suffering from social anxiety, you believe that other people may not want to be around you or may not care. And the only way that you're going to know is by building those relationships with people. And I hate to say it, but we usually find out that it's not true. Other people do want to know what we had to say. They do want to know about us. They do want to be around us. You know, we just have to allow other people to get to know us and to expose ourselves to people, which is the hardest thing. It's the hardest skill to learn. But learning that skill and being able to repeat it and being able to be comfortable with it is one of the most rewarding things that you can do in your life. And it can open up the door to a lot of opportunities, a lot of possibilities, and a lot of new friendships, and, you know, a lot of new relationships in your life, and can really change the course of where you may be going right now. So I hope that you found this episode helpful, especially if you are someone that's suffering from social anxiety, or you know someone that is suffering from social anxiety, that you may be able to help them out of that, or you may be able to at least, you know, have a conversation with them about it. And even while I have you guys on here, I do want to make another mention of the group that I am hosting here, and that is this Dungeons and Dragons role-playing therapy group. And if you want any more information about that, of course, you can visit my website at lifecarecounselingstl.com, or you can go straight to the URL, the website for this role-playing group, which is lifecarecounselingstl.com/role-playing-therapy-group. Or if you go to the main website, you can click on the menu and click on group therapy, and you can find out more information there. And I look forward to talking to you guys this next episode, where we're going to be talking a little bit about habits and New Year's resolutions and different things like that, to be able to get, as we get closer to closing out the year. And I want to thank you guys, and I look forward to talking to you guys in that episode. And I want to thank you guys for joining me in this episode. And I wish you all the best. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. The music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.